In the October New Yorker, there's a fascinating account of a so-called kitchen network of Chinese undocumented immigrants serving takeout in Pennsylvania, working a buffet in Maryland. It's a real story that is writ large, writ beautifully, in Atticus Lish's new novel, Preparation for the Next Life. It's at heart a love story between Zhou Lei, an ethnic Uyghur immigrant from China working in Queens, New York, trying to keep afloat while staying below the radar and working a series of soul-killing jobs, and Skinner, a veteran of three tours in Iraq whose soul may already be gone. They talk, but mostly they walk. Atticus Lish walks too, and he taught for a while in China. He learned Mandarin as a kid. He served in the military. He's the son of Gordon Lish, the fabled editor who worked with Raymond Carver. But Atticus Lish never thought he could write a book. Now he's crafted what Dwight Garner of the New York Times calls a novel unlike any other in its intricate comprehension of and deep feeling for life at the margins. And Atticus Lish joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Welcome.
Thank you so very much for that.
We hear both of their inner lives, both of these characters, one desperately trying to succeed. She's the hardest worker you've ever met. The other desperately trying to keep his eyes open. He's so medicated. But they really do become our eyes walking constantly through these neighborhoods. I know you have a little bit of a reading there. Can you, this is Zhou Lei, who's just walking. Can you read a little bit of what she sees and therefore what, as readers, we see?
Further on, the sounds of deep music came from behind the houses, from what sounded like a well hidden behind abandoned and burned out squats, mattresses and sofas in piles of trash next to dark porches you were afraid to look upon. There were no more city blocks. It just went on and on. As she cleared the corners of buildings, she saw scenes in the trees behind them, distant, silent figures in white shirts milling around a car with all the doors open. There was the sense of strangers who lived among each other, robbing each other, predicting who would be robbed next. The road ran by a park area that was dead gray in the dull light, and the houses behind it were utterly silent. Hmm.
Do I understand that you made these walks? I mean, first of all, for non-New Yorkers, describe where she is and how vast this area is that many of the people in New York just drive over on their way to Long Island.
If you get off the train at Ozone Park on the A train and you walk down Liberty Avenue, you just keep going and you get towards 109th Street and Rockaway. Then I went north on, I want to say, Monroe Street, crossed Hillside Avenue, and then went as far east as starting to be Long Island at that point, and then up
Port Washington, Northern Boulevard.
Yeah, to what is it, Little Neck, Great Neck?
Right.
It would be Great Neck, I guess. Yeah, Douglaston. So that was the loop. I think it's about 40 miles.
I was going to say that's an amazing amount of walking.
It's a lot of walking, I know.
It assaults you with, first, huge graffiti that, as you say, lumbers along like elephants, and then lawns, but in between really scary spaces. Like, what was that like?
That part that you just had me read, I actually was concerned at that point. But mainly I wasn't concerned for my safety. It was mainly interesting. You see an evolution as you walk. Walking, I've always related it to writing and reading a book. I was reading a lot of Hemingway for a while, and Hemingway would describe these hunts in the green hills of Africa. He would talk about he would be walking too. And so I think that wrapped up itself up in my mind with going on a long journey. And that's why I ended up taking a lot of these walks. My wife took them with me, too, a lot of the time. You know, we walked from Connecticut back to Grand Central Station one
day. What?
That's why Bridgeport is in the book. Bridgeport is in the first line of the book. And the reason Bridgeport got in my mind is because one day my wife and I just took the Metro North up to Bridgeport, Connecticut, and jumped off. And then we walked all the way back. It took us 24 hours. We walked back to Grand Central Station.
But, yeah. You know, explain to people, it's hard to even do that. There's bridges. You know, there's water that you have to cross. There's a lot of it is industrial. Yeah. Why do it?
I think I was a little bit fascinated with where you see New York City kind of taper out or grade out into the rest of the world. I thought, well, let's see what's next to what. you know? I mean, you might be in this area that you call home. Let's see what's over the next hill, and then let's see where it turns into Long Island and where Long Island turns into the countryside. I mean, I just – that transition between urban and rural is interesting. And there's a larger theme for me, which is how a lot of our ghettos have people who are rural in them. A lot of people from the third world who wind up living in depressed circumstances here in a real urban environment, they're coming from the country. And that countryside to urban movement is there's something about it. I guess because when you're in the country, you bring knowledge of the earth or something with you. And it's right here in the city.
In reading this, there's something thrilling about suddenly being taken through these neighborhoods. I remember as a child, I wanted to get down off the Long Island Expressway and see where the Dugan trucks were. You know, they're parked
the
there.
Dugan trucks.
Oh, Dugan. They delivered pastries and stuff, you know, and you could see that they were all parked in this sort of industrial area. And it sounds like she walked through things like that. Your character walked through things like that. But the difference is that you can do it to see what's thrilling. Your character is kind of trapped there.
That's right. My stuff is really neither here nor there. This is just what went into trying to create an experience for the reader. Yes. Yeah.
Did you feel that, though, at times? Did you, you know, try to imagine how a young Chinese woman would feel just walking and walking with no papers, no identity, no real grasp of the language?
Well, definitely when working on that scene, I tried to get the whole book to come to the point where in this scene, all the doors are closing for her. And that was how I had imagined it from the outset. I wanted to create a situation where there was very few ways out for somebody.
Hmm. Atticus Lish, the book is Preparation for the Next Life. And by the way, that comes from a saying over a mosque that your young Uyghur Chinese worker enters. Preparation for the Next Life?
It sort of sums up everything that the book is really about to me, because Zole wants to put together a life. She meets Skinner and she's in love with him, and she wants to for them both to work and to get healthy and to build a life together. So that's what she's struggling to do, and there are many obstacles to that because she doesn't have papers. She could get deported at any time, and Skinner's falling apart. For Skinner, it's his next life after combat. And the next life also refers to the afterlife. There's an element of menace when you say that, or if you may not be able to do it in the actual life.
Yeah. Atticus Lish, thanks so much.
Thank you.